solid voidlings. Diarv, the lawkeeper at your service. Gather round my temporal scrying bowl with your ales close at hand as we recount all that has happened so far in our story. Two of our adventurers, Sokranagis, a Yuan-Ti pureblood warlock with a distaste for inferiority and a penchant for languages.
Wuxiao Lura Inertia casted a seal sized potato!
Potato?
Yelling at the dwarf saying, "You will die by my hands, half sized potato."
And Rook, a shady Kenku with sticky fingers and a hatred for gnomes.
You can still move, though.
Shoddy weapons, and so I drop the bow, pull the daggers out, and then this time I'm gonna go for the hot potato back.
Found themselves on the raw end of a slave auction. They were carted off to their new owner, the gender-fluid Goliath Oias, owner and operator of the Spark and Sling traveling gladiatorial ring. There, they met two other combatants. Tumani, a nature-bound purple-skinned tiefling.
I scream, ice, ice, baby. It's like...
Okay. All right. There's a sort of like an outrage of applause, but then they sort of realize that Poe was the tiefling, and then they sort of just like quiet down again.
Is there like a common law for like the middle finger in this game?
And Roderick Ludwig, a blundering barbarian with the intellect of a beast of burden.
Look at this! And he turns around and he like wiggles his butt at you and there's a whole bunch of ice still on the pulling cloth.
I just gotta pull the ice out of his butt.
It's all stuck to his butt hairs.
We've like done this before.
This is Ludwig's favorite part.
After each completed a successful round of the arena, a mysterious stranger offered them a deal.
Once your objective is complete, you will be free. You can stay in this hellhole and fight your way to freedom, or you can perform, well, I'm not going to say a simple task, but a task for me, and earn your freedom that way.
Is there coin involved, my lady?
I can only assume there will be plenty of reward to go around.
Then no need for shackles for me. Coin indeed.
She agreed to purchase them from OIS in exchange for their help in dealing with a personal matter. An old friend of hers by the name of Belloc had fortified himself in a citadel, and she figured he was up to nefarious deeds. He had warded the citadel against her presence, and she had another task that required her attention. The group agreed and was teleported to the forest outside of a small town named Oakhurst. In another part of the world, Quilonin, a retired half-elf cleric of the Mother Goddess Shantea, was offered an opportunity of her own. Her old friend Tulani informed her that in order to join the elite group of the region known as the Witches of Rashomon, she would have to leave the comfort of her garden, travel the world, and return only with two satisfactory tales, one of unmatched bravery and the other of questionable morality.
That sounds to me like I have to deny myself who I am. It's not exactly noble. But if I belong to the sisterhood, I will also gain in power, wisdom, and knowledge. And what else do I have to do here except stay the same?
Quilonin said farewell to her plants, leaving them in the care of a newlywed young couple, and set off on her path.
We give a slight chuckle, because I know these words are true. We do change, though we stay the same ever more.
Eventually landing herself in Oakhurst as well. There she met our four adventurers, and with a little encouragement from her goddess, agreed to follow them on their quest. After filling their bellies at the Bearded Boar Inn, run by the local innsman Garon, they set off. After fighting their way through ghastly beasts made of twig and briar,
he's gonna say, "Get the leaf out of here."
Dispatching goblins and skeletons.
I searched the bodies.
Okay. As soon as you step into the room, you hear the clacker of the bones, and you see
6 pinpoints of red flame as the skulls, the eyes and the skulls,
I knew that was gonna happen.
burst into flame, and you see the 3 dead archers reanimate.
Oh, great.
And draw their bows.
And making loose packs with the Citadel's resident kobold clan.
Aww. Come here, little buddy.
Kobolds aren't really cute. State your word.
I am Nepo, keeper of the dragon.
They eventually made their way to Belloc. He had been studying a strange fruit that grew on an unholy tree. With the power to cure any ailment, he advised them to abandon their quest.
Young one, in life, there are fights you should fight and ones you should run from. You should have run.
This equates my freedom, homie. I ain't running.
The group hastily dispatched his minions, and in a surprising show of strength from Quillanen, brought Belloc to his end. In his final moments, he agonized over the fact that she had won. This set an uncomfortable feeling off in Tumani's mind that perhaps they had just disposed of the obligatory good guy in this relationship. Upon returning to Oakhurst, the group found the Harvest Festival in full swing. There, at the center of town, dancing in front of the band, was their benefactor.
All around are the villagers of Oakhurst, enjoying the music and bantering near stalls. The road carves a path through the crowd directly to the stage, where you see your taskmaster. Her elegant forest green cloak swaying as she dances, giving a glimpse of her bright red robes beneath.
Taking this moment to ask her name, a feat the group was becoming increasingly bad at with people they would meet, it was revealed she was M'Thazar, a hero of old, and a member of a group that reportedly saved the world nearly a century prior, known as the Seven Joys. The High Elf woman delighted to see them, requesting they return Belloc's ring to her, as per their agreement. Tumani again felt a twinge of awe, but begrudgingly relented. As the ring touched her hand, however, the elf's delight turned to an obsessive glee. 50 long years she'd waited to get her hands on that ring, and it was finally hers. The collective stomachs of the group fell as the illusion around them dropped.
What happens next takes you a moment to process. The villagers of Oakhurst melt away before your very eyes. A warble washes over the jubilant balladeers and leaves behind frightened players, cradling their blood-soaked instruments in their torn and broken fingers. Almost instantaneously, corpses appear around you in the center, wearing the garb of the city police force.
The villagers of Oakhurst watch terrified from the windows, barricaded inside their homes and places of business. The band cowered on the stage, their bloody fingers clutching their instruments, and hogtied near them, a middle-aged human woman. Before M'Thazar had much of a chance to monologue, Rook and Ludwig decided to act.
Ludwig is going to pull out the dagger that he's been holding, and he's going to toss it to try and stab her in the back as she's having this conversation.
Okay.
Rook's arrow struck true, drawing blood. However, she did not come alone. Her invisible lackey planted a poison dagger into Ludwig's back for his betrayal. Battle commenced, and with yet another accomplice entering the battlefield and a dozen reanimated guardsmen to contend with, hope seemed lost. Rook had stealthily attempted to release the prisoner, who, removing a magic ring around her finger, revealed herself to be a halfling and a member of the Seven Joys. She failed to see any other way for these adventurers to make their way out of the battle alive, aside from her surrendering herself and the one thing M'Thazar truly desired. Her amulet, along with Belloc's ring, formed part of a key.
The only way I know to save your lives is to give her what she wants.
I thought we gave her what she wanted, the damn ring.
She looks at the necklace in her hand. She says, she wants the key.
She's not getting the key. And I instantly jump on the woman to relieve
her. Okay.
From the amulet.
Rook did not like the sound of that at all, and stole her ring and the amulet, making a dash for the edge of town. before she could be overtaken by Emphazar and her anti-paladin mind slave, the halfling woman transmuted a patch of chainmail into an identical-looking amulet. She was slain, and seeing our adventurers retreat and her seeming prize in hand, Emphazar took her minions and teleported away. Rook, not looking back, adorned the magical ring of disguise, transforming himself into a human and continued to flee to the northwest. The townsfolk, now outside of the immediate threat of the psychotic sorcerer, were thankful to the adventurers. Carowin Hucrelli, to whom the group had returned her daughter from Belloc's influence, vowed that they would always be welcome as heroes in Oakhurst. Beaten and bruised, the group returned to the Bearded Boar to find it oddly empty of its innkeeper, Garon. Upon the bar top, a blood-stained satchel, its contents spilled out upon the counter. What will this next chapter entail? Will our heroes follow the patch of destiny laid before them? Will Rook ever return? What happened to Garon the innkeeper? And what will Emphazar do when she discovers the amulet to be a fraud? All of these questions and more shall be answered in the next chapter of If I Could Wish a Wish.